Okay, and it's like you say, it started out with Brandeis, quote, that when business conducts, when government conduct business, they do so on business terms. That's commercial.
And are indistinguishable from other players in the marketplace.
Okay, that's Brandeis. Now let's go to Mussolini. What did Mussolini say fascism was?
Mussolini stated in very clear terms what fascism is. And it is today what it was then, that it is the merger of government and corporate interests. Okay, so nowadays, and we have to go back to George Carlin, who explained how in the old days it was shell shock. Okay, and then as he explains over time, we began to rename these things, and of course you ended up with more and more syllables, softer and gentler language. And, you know, it doesn't convey the meaning of it did, like the original did, okay? Shell shock, that's called trauma, okay? And everybody gets it, okay? In other words, the name tells a story, it's informative. But the more modern versions are descriptive but not informative. So here we have fascism that we now call public-private partnerships. And what is that? If Brandeis didn't know it then, can we figure it out? There, where government acts in its corporate capacity as a business interest.
Right, you're blurring the lines.
Yes, you're muddying the waters and blurring the lines. And so what ends up happening is you are commingling public funds and public interests and public resources with those which are self-interested. Every corporation, as a matter of law, is compelled to benefit their shareholders, no matter even if it requires unethical conduct, they're obligated.
Well, let me just point out a distinction. California, a couple decades ago, consolidated their court system, so you no longer have Superior Court and Municipal Court and Traffic Court, because they all are handled by the same functionary, same brick and mortar, same room, same guy in a black robe. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the point there is that the court is not a thing you can touch. It's an abstract of it's a fiction of law. It is constituted of the facts and the parties. The court has to decide in every instance whether it has jurisdiction, which means when they say People v. Smith, he puts on one hat of a public of a Superior Court judge with a criminal case before him, and another one, it's Johnson v. Johnson, he puts on the civil hat. And if the mountain controversy doesn't bring it up to that level, he acts as a county or municipal court judge. But nothing changes except how he composes the abstraction. So when you say public and private
partnership,
mm-hmm. you have to ask at any given moment which face, mm-hmm. which persona, right. which face are you wearing? Because the public face and the private face are strangers to each other under our law, but seem to be wed in such a way that they're indistinguishable.
They're commingled in a partnership, so that now, and this is, look, Jefferson, we should look it up in the Federalist Papers, Jefferson warned us about this, that when you allow a group of men to organize themselves behind a corporate veil, they are more likely to conduct themselves in less than ethical ways because they have a shield. And if we don't recognize today that the corporate veil is a shield that is weaponized against the people, then it's because we're not paying attention. But it couldn't be more self-evident.
Well, that now we see that our courts are nothing but politics by other means. Okay, there's no law per se. There's just pomp and ceremony. Well, that's one of the things that have said the Spielman and the RICO, as I call them, poser advocates. Yeah. Okay, you're not real.
Yeah, no. The thing is that the courts have obligations, and it's up to the people to force them to live up to them. So, if for example the judicial code requires, and this is among the first three rules, that the court maintain the appearance of fairness.
Of propriety is the word.
Well, fairness is often and commonly used in that code.
Right.
Now, it's an important word because it means that they cannot take sides. And you'll find this all the way back in Scripture where it says, pay no respect to persons. They can't favor one or the other. They can't coddle a litigant. So here's my point. When you have somebody in there who is obviously vulnerable, okay, whether they're being represented or not, the court has an obligation to assure that they are that have the benefit of the equal protection law. Okay, it's law. That is official in our country. It's a matter of law. Equal protection is every person's right. Where's the fairness and equal protection when the court joins in to exploit an elder and remove their fundamental rights, right? Or even allow any of their fundamental protected rights to be compromised in any way at all?
Well, and that's the problem, is that they're simply ignoring their obligations. And in every one of these instances we're talking about, the obligation is fiduciary. There is no higher level of duty under our law, because it is based upon an oath of fealty, absolute loyalty. And when a knight swore fealty, he died to uphold that oath.
Right. Well, here's the other thing about fiduciary. We are many times talking about a situation in which one party has a vastly asymmetric advantage with respect to privilege or power. Now, when you have that kind of a relationship, it puts even more onus on the doctrine of fiduciary obligations. And the court has no excuse for ignoring or managing to forget that in any given moment. They cannot be allowed to do it. And I can tell you that if we don't inflict some serious pain on these people, it's not going to get any better. So that court has an obligation to explain itself.
Oh boy. And at this juncture, we're waiting for the Court of Appeals. We're waiting for the other side to see if they're going to continue to propagate this fraud, even to the point of the Court of Appeals in the state of Texas, after having done so in the federal courts. I don't see how they could do anything else but lie or just...
They could continue to pretend like they're dancing with pumpkins. Because mush heads, who else would be willing to take the floor with them? I mean, come on.
Well, you know,
pumpkin heads.
It's pretty bad.
Oh, it is. It's horror. It's, yeah. It's,
you know, but unlike others, you know, I don't play that shit.
No, it's looking more like a Hitchcock movie. They just can't hear the music, apparently.
Well, we'll have to do an overdub. All right.
Yeah, no, that I think we really need to. And you know what? The vet protection gang have some serious explaining to do as well. What business do you have entering into a contract of this kind with a court where, in fact, without avoiding conflicts of interest, because you're the... Look, you can make a contract with some government agency, right? But it has to be over a public interest, right? So identify the public interest in your contract with this court over these elders. Identify the public interest.
Ow. Well, the public interest is we're giving them a kickback on the benefits that we're getting from the federal government in order to provide these services.
Yeah, what have you done for me lately?
Well, I thought I was just telling you. I gave you a kick. Didn't I pay you off? What? I'll talk to Martha about it. She didn't pay up on time?
Right. You get a tax deduction.
It was an... Oh, there you go. Tax exempt. Oh, 501C. Now we're back to vet card.
You don't owe as much as you otherwise would have.
Well, I'll tell you what I love, though. I love the label game, okay? VetGuard USA. The woman I talked to, son wasn't even a veteran, okay? And yet they had the guardianship over him. And the guy in charge, first name was Christian.
Oh, yeah.
Well, his care home operation was titled Christian Nursing Centers or some shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in one instance it looks patriotic, and the other one looked like, oh God, I'm just a good Christian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Many will come in my namesake.
Thanks, Aja.